what, since the second half, really, how much they've really struggled.
Mind set.
Charged with finding some stability from this scrum, and he can't find it. That's a mighty shot. A mighty one. Leicester.
The scrum battle resumes now. And a big shot from Brazil. Oh, that's sensational.
Here comes the big Georgian scrum. They're absolutely demolished. The feature in front of.
What I'd like to see a lot more in all of Australian club rugby, Melbourne, Brisbane, Sydney, everywhere, like it's more collaboration actually between clubs.
Mm.
And to have the parochialism and the tribalism of club rugby is fantastic. But eventually, like, you know, from September until January, there's a few months there where you can actually collaborate and talk to each other, where you're not belting the snot out of each other on a Saturday.
Yeah.
Actually, collaboration and cooperation between the rugby fraternity, I think, should be better.
Welcome back to the next episode of The Journey of a Grassroots Rugby Coach. And today, my guest is Sean Hedger. Hedge, as he's affectionately known, is the Director of Rugby at IRA, the International Rugby Academy of Australia. In 2022, he was the head coach at Sydney Uni, where they won the Shoot Shield. Prior to that, he's coached at Bond Uni, he coached in Japan, and he also coached at the Melbourne Rebels in the early years. During our chat, we spoke about plan, act, review. We talk about being flexible of thought. What are your actual big rocks during a training session and throughout the year? How to give peer-to-peer feedback? How to create leaders in your teams? Watch other coaches in other sports and learn from them and what they do, and how can you use that in your practices? Collaboration between clubs, speak to other coaches. And there's a lot more we spoke about. I really enjoyed my chat with Hedge. And if anyone knows Hedge, he's always very gracious with his time and happy to talk rugby with anybody. So as always, give us a thumbs up, give us a rating, pass this on to anyone that you think can benefit from it. But most of all, sit back, relax, and enjoy my chat with Sean Hedger.
This episode of The Journey of a Grassroots Rugby Coach is brought to you by Bull & Bear Crew. Bull & Bear Crew is a range of men's skincare products. There is face moisturizers, face mist, body wash, beard wash, shave oil, and moisturizer. They come in a 100ml pack, aluminium bottles, so they're safe for traveling. You can use them check-in, your baggage. They also come in larger at-home bottles. All bottles are refillable, reusable, and recyclable. You can buy refill pouches to refill bottles you have at home if you don't want to purchase bottles from Bull & Bear Crew. They've just been released. A great product, all natural, or vegan, tested on men, not on animals, all that good stuff. Recyclable, reusable, and refillable, so you can use them over and over and over again. Go to their website, check them out, www.bullandbearcrew.com. Place your order. At the moment, they're only shipping within Australia, but keep your ears and your eyes out to the website. They may be able to extend the shipping at some point in the future. Please enjoy this episode. All right, well, let's make a start, mate. Thanks for joining me, Hedge. So for the people that might not know who you are, who are you, whereabouts are you at the moment, and what's your involvement in the grassroots game?
My current involvement is I'm working with IRA, and we run a lot of player development and coach development camps. We're interested in that side of the game of getting individuals, both players and coaches, better. And we're actually looking at expanding and doing some team development camps as well. But that's where we cross paths, mainly with schools and clubs, obviously trying to get their coaches and players a little bit better. But and I'm based on the beautiful north coast of New South Wales in Kingscliff, which is pretty hard to take, and a nice relief after being in Sydney last year. So Sydney last year, I was coaching at Sydney University, and prior to that, I've coached in Japan quite a bit, and also in the Brisbane Premier competition with Bond University for a 5-year stint as well.
Yeah, nice. And you were down here at Melbourne for a while too, I believe, back in the early days.
Yeah, had a year with the Rebels in Super Rugby. That was obviously a fantastic experience. The only other time I've coached in a professional game has been over in Japan. To have that 1 year with the Rebels, it was all too short. I wish it had been a bit longer, but there was a few mitigating factors in why I chose to take the role up in Queensland out of Melbourne. But it was an exciting time. Obviously, Super Rugby, the Melbourne Rebels had been around for a little while. They'd started to establish their identity, and it was a good organisation to be a part of.
Yeah, nice. Cool. Thanks, mate. Thanks for that. And I'm sure a lot of our listeners will either have met you or know of you or have heard of you. Anyone that's been around for a while would at least know or have heard of you. How'd you get into coaching in the first place, mate?
Oh, well, obviously rugby's been a big part of my life just as a player the whole way through. But at university, I studied sports science. So when you're studying that, it sort of does tend to push you towards the behind the scenes of playing and performance. And obviously coaching is pretty much at the forefront of that. In my second year of university, myself and another couple of students, we actually put our hands up to coach the under-19s team, which were all first-year kids. So, yeah, at the ripe old age of 20, myself and Darren Coleman were coaching the under-19s. And, it was a little country university up in Lismore, and we had a great little rugby club there that always had a bit of success in the local competitions. So that's what sort of our first steps into coaching were that. And then from university, I got a job as a development officer with New South Wales Rugby, based out in New South Wales in the regional area around Orange, Central West. And being a development officer, you're just coaching every day. You're coaching different kids. You're coaching different ages, different abilities. And it's all about selling the game and promoting how much fun it is to play. And that was a lot of learning on the go as well. It was a bit of teaching/coaching. So because you're in amongst schools a lot of the time. So, yeah, that sort of... and then through that, working with New South Wales Rugby, they were a very good organisation in terms of getting us down into Sydney and upskilling us as much as possible. Matt Williams was the coach of the Waratahs at the time, and he was fantastic. And, I was a 20-odd-year-old country development officer, and he said, come down and watch any Waratahs sessions whenever we want. And he would always give up his time and talk to us about the game. And, a big part of that that development officer role also was doing coach education or coach development. So it's like I was learning on the go there as well. But that teaching coaches to coach and coaching the coaches was always something that I did from a pretty early age too. So I've always enjoyed that.
Yeah, nice. I think back in the darker days, there wasn't a lot of that coach ed stuff going around, so that would have been pretty exciting to be at the forefront of that, especially out in those regional areas, mate. I'm from around that part of the world, so yeah, there's some would have done a few K's back in the day between.
At one stage, the area I was looking after went from Blackheath at the top of the Blue Mountains to Cobar, the far west. Like it was down south to like Parks and Forbes. It was decent chunk of land to get around, that's for sure. It was good fun.
Yeah, it's good fun. Yeah, I did a bit of development work when I was in WA out in the country. Yeah, and you learn a lot as well about how to coach kids, because you get different kids everywhere, especially especially over there. It's a non-rugby state, so
even more so. You're introducing the game all the time, aren't you?
Yeah, no, and it was. I learned so much doing that as well. So that's good, mate. What about some lessons that you've learned over the years that you've been coaching that that you'd be that you could share, and but more around the time, like we all have those shitty days or that shitty season or that shitty session. And as young coaches, we often, you know, and I've been there myself, you just think, no, that's it, I'm not good enough. You think about throwing your toys out of the cot and walking away. But the good coaches go, yeah, that was shit.
Yeah.
But how do we get better? How do I get better? How does the team get better? What do we do next?
I definitely can relate to that. There's always been those sessions. I think like self-reflection is the most important thing straight away.
Yeah.
And go back to what your basics are as a coach. And I always reckon the coaching process of plan, act, review. And so self-reflection is your review, right? And if you've had a session, no matter whether it's good or bad or how you feel it was good or bad, you've always got to review it. So that plan, act, review. And I always feel really confident that a session is going to be good if I'm really well prepared.
Yeah.
If I'm early, if all the equipment's there, if I've got everything I need, it feels like you're going to start the session well. So I think they sort of relate, don't they? And that's what that coaching process. I always remember a diagram from my very young days, and it was just that circular pattern where it's plan, act, review, just with arrows going in between those three words in one direction, because that's what you got to keep just doing over and over and over. That's the coaching process. Mm. So if you do feel like you've had a bad day, that's the first thing I go back to. Was I planned enough? When I was out there acting or doing that, was I doing my normal behaviors or did I do something different? And that's all that review and self-reflection process. And if you do work out what you did well or didn't do well or didn't do enough of, that becomes the first part of your planning for the next session. That's why it's such a that's the coaching cycle. I go back to that quite often.
Yeah, no, that's some good insight there, mate. And yeah, I think sometimes, especially those first two, often get overlooked. For a lot of reasons.
Mm.
You know, especially at the community level, you've been at work all day and you get home from work and you're home for 10 minutes, and then you're off to training and you get to training and you know, for whatever reason, players are running late or don't turn up or the weather's crap and it's just like, oh.
But that's the other thing, isn't it? Like sometimes the best laid plans just go out the window. On the way to training, you get four text messages from your number 9, your number 10, your number 2. Half your spine can't make it to training and all of a sudden, your big team session has to get changed. So, yeah, as much as plan, act, review is important, probably flexibility, especially in the grassroots game, flexibility of thought and flexibility of mind is really important too.
Yeah. So we'll circle back to that where we've got that plan in place and like you said, we've got that, for whatever reason, the front row can't make it to training or, you know, your 9, 10, 15 can't make it or, you know, a fair chunk of guys for whatever reason. What would be the best way to go about, like, so you've got your session planned out and all of a sudden you can't do that block or you can't do that block.
Mm.
There's been a few coaches that go, well, if I've got 5 things on my session, I know the 3 that I have to do and the other 2, we get to them if we get to them. Is that your process or do you have another process that you...
No, that's pretty spot on, I reckon. If you can get to 3 out of 5 things you planned, that's probably a good session.
Yeah.
You've had some adversary sort of things happen along the way. The other thing I was thinking is, again, if your session does get a bit muddled because of availabilities and that, you've always got to have your big rocks that you can go back to. Like, what are your big rocks of your season? Like, and then that sometimes that relates to whatever your club or your team's DNA is. Like a lot of times, and for everyone, you can always just go back to the core skills of the game. You know, your attack, your defense, your contact, and the skills within those. Like, if you can't do teamwork because you don't have certain players, well, you know what? 12 blokes can do a lot of contact work, can do a lot of good attack work. can do tackle tech, but you can always maintain your core skills. That's if you get through those in a session, well, it hasn't been a waste of time, that's for sure, because that'll always serve you well on a Saturday if your core skills are going well. So as long as you, I think if you recognise what your big rocks are, go back to them, it's not the end of the world.
Yeah, mate, and that's a good point, being able to be flexible and know exactly what you need. And I think too, the days are gone. I know when I played, probably when you played, you know, if you had eight guys turn up for training, the coach would flog you because you're down on numbers, and you just go, well, mate, why am I flogging these guys? They're the guys that are here.
Right. That's always the old thing, isn't it? Don't punish the blokes who do turn up.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's how it used to be, mate. You know, like we're short on numbers. I just run, and you just go, mate.
Yeah. I think the coach is just hoping that you get on the blower and tell all the blokes who didn't turn up what you really think of them, how they've let you down.
Yeah. That's probably the thought process, but I don't think it works all the time either.
It doesn't. You don't want to punish the blokes who are turning up, because you just want to make it an enjoyable place to be.
Yeah. Oh, that's it, mate. Exactly right. So let's flip that a little bit, mate. What's some of the greatest moments you've had as a coach?
I mean, you can always, like, a question like that, you sort of tend to go straight for the results. Like, what the results? Obviously, the result I had in 2022, winning the Shoot Shield with Sydney University, it's definitely, that's probably my best result. There was one other result over in Japan, about 2010, and we got promoted from second division to first division, and no one expected us to. So that was, I don't think even the hierarchy of our club expected us to. That was a pretty fantastic result, because over there the promotion relegation system is always, it's intricate, and it tends to change from year to year. But the bottom line is we needed to win with a points differential of about 30 plus in this last game of the year. And we managed it. And it was against a team that hadn't lost a game all year. But they had already qualified for first division, so I think they just put the queue in the rack.
Yeah.
We were the lucky beneficiaries of anyway. So we got this amazing win. That was pretty amazing. But I don't know, the greatest results as a coach, sometimes it's like it's what you achieve and how you achieve it. And I just referred to the Shoot Shield, but talking to a few people this year, like, yeah, the result is the result, but the how we did it was probably, a pure coaching point of view, it was really, really satisfying. Just the fact that the last try that we scored was, it was just by doing, they were doing the things that we've been working on since December, the year before. It was, you set your attack framework in place, and it was just all of the things that the team said they wanted to be all came out in this passage of play that led to our last try, which sort of put us in front by 7 points. That was satisfying. That's probably my most satisfying coaching moment. Like, the jubilation of the victory is one thing, but when you go, all the work you've done on the training field, and you see that happen, you know, we've got unstructured possession and used our attack framework for 21 phases and scored. That's the sort of stuff you have been doing every Tuesday and Thursday night for about 8 months.
Yeah, no, that's good, mate. Yeah, and a lot of the coaches I talk to, they sort of just briefly touch on results, but then it's that, you know, the team did this.
Mm.
Like I said, we've been working on it. Or you get that one player that's been working his butt off on a skill, and all of a sudden he just nails it, and then he just takes off.
I think that the other thing is, like, from a coaching point of view, it's always, again, satisfying if you see a bunch of young men or women who hardly know each other in January, and then all of a sudden in July they're willing to, you know, fall over broken glass for each other and that sort of thing. And you see that come out in games where, you know, you're defending your line for 10 phases in a row, all that sort of stuff. Like, that's where, and then you see them, you know, achieving something as a team. I think there's very, you know, we're social animals. There's something very very satisfying about that.
Yeah,
to see the group come together.
Yeah, that's good, especially for some of the coaches at grassroots level, because you don't know who you're going to get from one year to the next. And I've been at clubs where you're the only coach and just don't know who you got next year. You don't even know who you're going to have next week, to be fair, sometimes.
And that's where it's really important. Like, actually, again, you work out what your big rocks are. One of your big rocks should be about just getting this group to work together and work well together and work for each other. Like, as soon as you see a group who are willing to work for each other and not let each other down, again, that's incredibly satisfying. And if that is one of your big rocks, I think that can come across in performance in a number of ways: attack, defense, scrum, or line out. It comes across in everything. But it should be it always should be a little bit of an aim of yours as a coach, I reckon. You've got to so can't just all be X's and O's and technique. You've got to sort of be able to touch into that social aspect of why people are there and bringing them together.
Yeah, absolutely. Because for some players, that's their outlet for the week.
Oh, for sure.
You know, they've been on the tools or sitting in the office or whatever, and that's just their outlet for the week. So getting them together with a group of people that get things done. So with that, around training sessions, it's probably a bit different with the Shoot Shield stuff and the Bond stuff. But how do you keep session? And it'd probably be relevant for the stuff at IRA. How do you keep the sessions so that you've got that kid or that player that's potentially he's on the way up. He's, you know, this kid's an elite player. He's going to be this. He's blah blah blah. And then you've got his mate who turns up who is only ever going to play fourth grade. But he'll probably be the club president or the major sponsor or the guy at the club that's, you know, they name a stand after him. You've got to develop both of them, but they're at that different level. So how does that look for you?
Because
it's the challenge for club coaches.
Oh, it is. It is. I think is essentially everyone's there for an opportunity.
Yeah.
You can't. Eventually, yes, there's first grade, second grade, third grade, fourth grade. There is. But there's lots of opportunities to still have everyone in together. And again, Sydney University, the last place I coached at, is a big powerful club, but they started the season, everyone in together. Wasn't until before Christmas. So October, November, December, everyone was in together. We had Colts three blokes and first graders who were just doing the same skills all together. So they saw it as an important, again, what are your big rocks? What's your DNA? That's an important part of it. Everyone gets an opportunity. Everyone's on the same field. And then even in the season, periodically, all of the centres from fourth grade, from Colts three, fourth grade up, would all go and be in one group. And they do that across all position specifics. There's a couple of ovals there and you just all divide up on the others, little pockets of areas. And you know, the Colts three bloke is running unders and overs lines with the first grade outside centres. And they're learning.
Yeah.
No, learning probably better than what they do from coaching, because everything is so specific. And as long as the club buys into it, as in, the thirds Colts know that if you're going to go and get this opportunity to train with the first graders, well, then you shut up, you listen, and you contribute, you know, through it. You don't fart ass around when you're training with first graders. And vice versa, the first graders would be going, they didn't see it as a waste of time. It's like, it's a little bit of a breakup of your training week. It's a bit of variety.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're proud to then, get to know the thirds Colts kid. And then if they see him do something good on the weekend, they're like, oh, wow, we've contributed to that. So it's very good sort of club ethos.
Yeah.
They're all each other. So I think that was a good example of it.
Yeah, no, that's good. Yeah.
Yeah, because everyone, like I said, everyone deserves an opportunity. And I think that's the beauty of club rugby, isn't it? It's everyone together. So at the end of the day, if there's ever a club issue, a fourth grader has the same voice as a first grader.
Yeah.
That's what it should.
And, you know, a fourth grade is a hamstring tear away from playing first grade.
That's right.
For some of them anyway. And, you know, it's probably the same up in the Shoot Shield. A lot of their third graders here, they're all ex-first graders anyway.
Yeah.
You're just a bit slower, or they can't train every night because of work or family or whatever. But, yeah, some of them have still got some good skills and just get them involved and helping the others. So I like that, how that would look, especially this position specific stuff.
It wasn't one of those things. No one dropped their bottle and went, do we have to do this? It was like they actually looked forward to it. Probably got sick out of my voice, the blokes in the top squad.
Yeah. I'm just trying to work out now how we could do that down here.
Mm.
Yeah. Something for me to think about. No, that's really good. So feedback during your sessions, and I know there's heaps of different ways to give feedback, heaps of, you know, everyone likes feedback differently. But in a session where you've probably got, you know, a 5-minute block of this and a 5-minute block of that, what's your process or your thoughts around feedback in session to players?
Yeah. I try to keep most of my feedback group based,
mm-hmm.
especially on field. If I ever know that a particular player is struggling with something or not putting effort in on something, I'll always just go and grab them one-on-one. And if you have a time in session to grab them one-on-one, maybe, but most of the feedback, again, I reckon it comes back to your planning. It's like, okay, I'm going to do this activity. What do I want to get out of it? And hopefully if this activity works in the manner that I want it to, they should learn A and B. So the feedback I'll generally give at the end of that activity is, did they achieve A and B, or did they not? Like, why didn't they? And probably do get a bit of feedback from them, a bit of reflection back straight away as well. But I try to, like I said, I try to in session. I'd be doing feedback. We did this really well. Okay, we shut down the blind side really well because our winger was communicating really well with our blokes getting off the deck. And so we had good structure on our blind side. Well done. But that's probably the outcome that I wanted when I designed the activity, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I try to keep it very we and us feedback in session. But if I saw that there was one winger who was not communicating really well, and I'd go over to him and, you know, sort of say, you have to do that better. But I try to do that you one-on-one.
Yeah.
You know, there's a whole group, and I want to be 20 blokes standing there and start pointing at blokes and going, you.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's, you know, I reckon there's something about the youth and kids these days that they don't respond well to that, I don't think.
No, you're right. And I think if you've got that good culture and that good connection with your players, the other players will probably give him that feedback anyway throughout and then you just reinforce it. So, no, that's really good, mate.
That's it. You did right. That player policing or player feedback or peer-to-peer feedback is definitely the best type anyway. And, you know, if you're, again, within your planning, if you're lucky enough to you get a good group of leaders within your group, you sort of say, I remember on the weekend we got stripped down the blind side a couple of times. Well, we're going to do this activity. We want to fix that up. Key points of the communication and the roles there. So I'm going to introduce it, but really good if you blokes reinforce that as well within the group. again, I was pretty lucky at a club like Sydney Uni. There was no shortage of those sorts of blokes who you could rely on to help do that sort of feedback within as well.
Yeah, and I think thinking about it now, you've got that, and then when they break and they do those position specific stuff as a club, so you got all your centres doing that. That then gives them that opportunity to have those chats as well, and that just builds that whole feedback network that everyone's getting, and they're all probably getting the same feedback all the way through.
Yeah, definitely.
That's really good, mate.
Peer-to-peer feedback is, that's when you, it actually makes your job as a coach a truckload easier.
Yeah.
As long as the feedback they're giving is correct. You know what I mean? Like, there's not wild ideas all of a sudden bouncing around the place. But if you've got your core leaders on the same page as you, a lot of those messages are getting delivered out with clarity from the coaching group, from the leadership group to the greater group.
Yeah,
that's the best way to get clarity across through your greater group, I reckon.
Yeah, no, that is gold. Because feedback's that elephant in the room, I suppose, isn't it?
Leadership's the most precious commodity, I reckon, in clubs at the moment. And you could, I don't want to go straight to the bad news for the week, but like the Wallabies, like they were lacking a bit of leadership towards the end of that game, and there's a reason for that because they're all young. And they haven't got much experience, so they're probably looking around for a bit of guidance, and it's just not quite there. So in your own club, identifying people who've got a bit of leadership trait, and then if you're lucky enough to have someone who's been around for a few years and is up over around the 100 cap mark for the club or first grade, like those blokes are so important.
Yeah,
and you can, as a coach, you should really learn to use them and rely on them and not overburden them. Don't absolve your responsibilities to them. Work together with them and find a group that do want to work together and understand the importance of being leaders. It makes your life as a coach a lot easier, I reckon. And it's definitely leads to better performance.
Yeah. And a coach that I coached with a couple of years ago, he said, find your followers. If you want to bring in a new backline move, who are the guys that are going to influence the group that'll work, and then get them to make it look like they're running it and all that type. So, it's just, getting that player buy-in is gold. Coach development, mate. Besides the great work that you and Grant and Fraze do at IRA, what else do you do for coach development, or what insight could you give players around that coach development? Because we've all got coach education, and that's that sitting in the classroom and listening to Grips and all those guys and. Level one, level two, three, four, whatever it is. And if that's all you ever do as a coach, you're probably not going to get anywhere. It has its place in the system. It gives you the basics. You need to be able to develop yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's, as you said, it does have its place 100% because there is some really good theory that I think provides a good framework for you to work within.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's the practical stuff, I think, which is really important, and it is much harder to get good practical examples to aid your development. For me personally, growing up as a young coach, I would just go and watch as many other coaches as I could, and I still enjoy doing that now. My kids are a twin boy and girl. And neither of them are interested in rugby, so they play other sports. I'm happy to go and watch my daughter's netball coach. She operates. My son plays hockey. He's got a good hockey coach. And in hockey, I find is a little bit more relatable to to rugby, for example, you know, bigger pitch and the invasion game sort of aspect to it. But yeah, just you know, how he designs his games, it reminds me of that game sense learning. It's really good. Yeah, so just watching other coaches is how I developed probably the most. When I was younger, I was lucky enough, like I said, I was at New South Wales Rugby and I was up at Queensland Rugby and I was based in Brisbane. And, you know, I'd walk out. This is back, you know, I was still doing evening training sessions with the Reds before a professional. But I'd be coming out of, you know, out of the office and, yeah, and the Reds are doing, you know, captain's runs and things out on the field. So I'm going and watching them and watching John Connolly around the Reds, all that sort of stuff. So watching and observing other coaches was probably what I did the most when I was younger. So that's something you can go and do yourself. But the actual, because that gives you the practical implications of coaching. You get to see coaching in practice rather than coaching in theory. And that's something that we actually try to do in our IRA coaching courses is there's a coaching cohort that are in camp the same time as the players. And if I've got Todd Ikefu running a contact session with a bunch of 16 and 17-year-olds out on the field, you'd be absolutely mad to leave the coaching cohort sitting in the classroom.
Absolutely.
So they're out there. And what we actually do is prior to the on-field session, Todd and I will go and talk to the coaching cohort and say, well, today I'm focusing on these things, not the ball placement or it's clean out, whatever, I'm going to focus on this. This is what I believe. This is how I like to implement this, how I like the players to do it. We'll tell the coaching cohort that. He goes and runs the session. The coaching cohort just stand by and observe. They're just observing the whole session. And then at the end of that, the players are probably wrecked. They go off to do some recovery, but then Todd and I will come back to the coaching cohort and say, okay, what did you think? Tell me how I went. You know, or did anything come up there that I didn't explain earlier? And so you get that, yeah, you get that theory, but practical application and then practical reviewing as well. I think that's where you really learn as a coach is when you can see things in practice. And then if you're lucky enough to get things explained in detail, that's even better.
Yeah, no, that's really good, mate. Yeah, and we try and do that down here with some of our junior coaches, invite them along to our sessions and just give them the session plan and give them some, you know, the radio or whatever, and they listen to, you know, the comms between the coaches and everything, and then it's at the end of it, you know.
Yeah.
Not quiz them, but just get some feedback off them or...
You know, you're doing that within your club from your junior to your senior club, good collaboration between the juniors and seniors. That's fantastic. What I'd like to see a lot more in all of Australian club rugby, Melbourne, Brisbane, Sydney, everywhere, like it's more collaboration actually between clubs.
Mm.
And to have the parochialism and the tribalism of club rugby is fantastic. But eventually, like, you know, from September until January, there's a few months there where you can actually collaborate and talk to each other, where you're not belting the snot out of each other on a Saturday.
Yeah.
Actually, collaboration and cooperation between the rugby fraternity, I think, should be better in Australia.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think it goes back to the old days where, you know, you'd go to those sessions and they get, well, this is my information, you can't have that. And you just go, really, dude? Like... We can run, so you and I can run the same session with two different teams and get two different results because you've got a ball playing 10 and I've got a passing 10. Like,
yeah,
you know, like really, you know, and you're not going to give away game secrets. You just want to, you know, make it. And if all our coaches are better, we make better players, and then the game's better.
Yeah,
and more people want to play. Yeah,
definitely. I think that's what sort of holding us all back a little bit at the moment is. I reckon there's that holding on to secrets. This is what I think, and that's it. Well, you know, if you only believe what you think, you don't open your mind. Like, that's it. You're never going to get to great heights. We're only going to be stuck doing doing a certain thing. Whereas if you get new ideas and share ideas, it'll add variety and complexity to it, perhaps to your game model and things like that. And then I think there's just a bit of a lack of clarity, even from the top down.
Mm.
Yeah, but then there's probably also the case that there might have been coaches from the top trying to disseminate stuff down, and so as soon as someone below goes, "Nah, I don't want to listen to that," the blokes at the top go, "Oh, well, stuff is like I'll just look up my own backyard again." But we're all looking after our own backyards, but we're not helping each other out enough, I don't think.
Yeah, no, you're dead right, mate. I think it's different. And I think we've got to get that sweet spot where we're all happy as coaches just to, you know, sit in a room and, you know what, we don't all even agree on everything.
No.
And I've had people contact me through the pod going, "Oh, I listened to that episode with so-and-so and I didn't agree with what he said." And I went, "Cool.
Yeah.
That's fine." Because if we all coach exactly the same, it's a boring game of footy.
Exactly. And how many times have you heard that, you know, guys go on, you go on a level two or a level three coaching course and they'll come back, "Oh, yeah, I learned a bit." But the most I learned was when we all went down to the pub and had a beer together. And you're standing around at a table and you actually start talking footy, like good talking. Like the level four, little fire pit out the back of Narrabeen, they got a hell of a workout.
I think the first night there was myself, Chubby, and Hendo having a beer. We spoke about scrums for like 2 hours.
Other
people there didn't know what we were talking about, but it was just guys talking freely,
sharing and collaborating.
Yeah.
Again, at our Lara camp at Narrabeen, which is just after your level four, on the back end of that camp, we have a game that the players, we put in a team, they have a game. And what we do is we get in position-specific coaches. So I've got Laurie Weeks in to do the props. Chubby, Bubba came in to do the hookers. And Sam Wykes for the locks. And Brian Smith, Chris Deleuze for the nines and tens. Anyway, Dan Parks, Zach Beer, like all these shield coaches, PSS. And they talk to the boys in the morning about what their role in their positions were. And then there was a gap of about, because the boys had to go and prepare for the game, there's a gap of about 2 hours. And I said, let's all come up to the coach's cohort room and sit around. And I go, "Righto, Laurie, tell us what you said to the props. What was important for props?" So he goes, "Oh, I'll tell this, that." And and then Bubba, "What did you tell the hookers was important?" So we just went around, we sat in a big circle, just went around, and everyone started asking questions and all this. And it was fantastic. And the really light bulb moment for me was when Mitchie Inman, one of the Rebels' favourite sons, he went and finished his career in France, and Mitch got up and started saying how important scrums were, and he learned how important scrums were in France, and how, you know, that's the forwards live for it, and it's such an important part of the game. And he admitted, he said, "Mate, I had no appreciation for it until I went over there." And like when you've got an outside back like Mitch Inman understanding the importance of scrums, right, that's when it's a powerful group sitting around discussing ideas. And that's that, again, that should happen more often. And, you know, there was 9 different shoot shield clubs represented in that room, and everyone had a great time. We just all talked, and we nearly missed the kickoff of the games because we were talking. But that, the opportunity for those forums, I think it'd be great if we had more of them.
Yeah. And, mate, coaches like talking about this, not about themselves, but about the game, you know, and especially if they're, you know, even if they're a head coach, what their passion is, you know, like Chris Deleuze and I could sit there and he'd talk about nines and I wouldn't understand a word he's saying, but I might pick up one little piece of gold I can take back with me and go, "Oh, this is what this guy was telling me the other day," you know, like,
You pick up something that a former professional halfback who's now a head coach of a shoot shield club says about how a number nine should play.
Yeah.
You take that and give that to your club number nine. Well, there you go. Spread the message, everyone. So I don't know. That would be like coach development. I reckon if we as a country, I reckon, like we said at the very start, level 1, 2, 3, 4s are a perfect framework, but we need to put some more flesh around them.
Yeah, and making, and I think what COVID has done has opened up a lot of, because there's a lot of online stuff, there's been a lot of connections with people all around the world on different types of stuff that you probably would never have spoken to previously. So but if we could bring that back internally and, like, yeah, you said, just get, you know, coaches around here in Australia, even just, you know, a lot of us are sitting around not doing much at all at the moment. So and it keeps our brain going as well, you know.
Yeah. I actually went and did a cricket coaching course for the young fellas into cricket. And it was interesting. It was the foundation level course. And it was all practical. It was like we met on the field. It was 4 hours. And all the guy did was he said, okay, actually he had this group of cards. Mm-hmm. And he picked out a card. So he put us into groups of three or four. You get a card and it's like, your team needs to be better at fielding. Their short throws at the stumps are poor. Design an activity. And there was all, he had, you know, stumps and balls and marker cones and everything. It's like, that's it. He goes, right, you've got 5 minutes. The three of you go design an activity. That was it. And we did that for fielding, for batting, for bowling. And all he ever did was, okay, bowling. He said, these are the three most important things. Key point, 1, 2, 3. That's it. At the end, so it was all about how to create an activity for a aspect of the game. That was it. And he said, this is the most important thing you need to do. This is your foundation. He said, if you want to learn how to teach your son or your team how to be better bowlers, he said, I'll be back up in Northern New South Wales. I'll do a bowling masterclass. I'll do a batting masterclass. He said, come and learn technique there. Right now, this is all you're doing. Which I thought was a really interesting approach from New South Wales cricket. That was the beginner part of your coaching journey.
Yeah. Just coaching having to think about how you coach the fundamentals of the game. Yeah.
Well, how to design an activity that's going to keep active and the outcome is short throwing at a target. That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was. I thought it was a pretty clever way to do it.
Yeah. No, that's it. That's really interesting. Yeah, I've never thought of it that way. So, and I think too, a lot of the times we, especially a lot of young coaches, and I've seen it, and you've probably seen it. You're watching these coaches in that club land, and you're just going, oh, you saw that drill on YouTube. You saw the All Blacks or the Wallabies run that drill or whatever, which is fine.
Yep.
But do you know what to do? How do you progress it? How do you regress it? You know, like, how do your under 12s, you know, you've got under 12s, mate. You haven't got, you know, a super team. What are your three key points that you're trying to get out of that? And they probably couldn't tell you.
What are the three key points and what is the outcome you're hoping
to
achieve from that activity?
Yeah.
Again, Fraser and I did a little coach ed. Thing with Brisbane Junior Rugby Union. It was great on a Wednesday night or so. It was after the season had finished, I think. There was about 40, 50 blokes turned up. It was good. It was a good, and we, Fraser and I said, okay, we're not going to tell you what to coach. We're going to talk about how to coach.
Yeah.
So we did a lot of that sort of stuff. And I said, left my email address. If you've got any questions, give us a buzz initial. But, yeah, a lot of the questions still come through. Oh, I still need a really good drill for my under-10s passing. It's like, okay, I can point you in the direction of like the Rugby Australia site's pretty good for that.
Yeah, they've done a lot of work on that.
Yeah, but I thought I missed the mark a little bit with if they're still asking that question, but you go, no, what's your outcome?
Yeah.
What do you want your outcome to be? Then you get your activity from that.
Yeah. And I think too, a lot of the times, and I know when I was a lot younger in my coaching journey, it wasn't that I didn't have the skill. I just wanted someone to validate me, to say I was actually doing it properly. Instead of now, I'll just do it. And mate, my boys know I'll stop a drill halfway through and go, guys, this is not how I pictured that it was going to look. Let's move on to something else, you know. And that comes with confidence and knowledge and, you know, all that stuff as well.
that validation would also come from collaboration, wouldn't it? Like,
yeah,
talking to people about it. And that, again, that comes back to we need more forums, I think, for coaches to help develop each other.
Yeah. And I remember I went to Rugby Palooza 1 year, and Needsy was up there, and myself and Murray Harley, and Needsy ran a scrum session. And then the three of us were just sitting around, like standing around talking afterwards. And this guy goes, you know, he questioned why we were talking to each other. I go, mate, you know, he goes, aren't you in competition? I went, no, we're actually just trying to make scrummaging better. Like, doesn't matter where you're coaching, we want players to be able to do this skill and that skill. Like, and some players will be able to do it at this low level, and some players will be able to do it at the high level. But if they've got the key points, we're away.
Yeah, that's a crazy question, like, about.
It was just what, a weird, I just went, oh, you know, like, we're not in competition with each other, but even if we were, it doesn't matter.
No, exactly. And it's some of the most fun. The year I had in Sydney was really enjoyable because I knew most of the other Shoot Shield coaches, and yeah, it was really good catch up with them. You don't talk to them at all in the week leading in. That's when you don't collaborate. That one. But then after that, you sit around and have a talk, and and you start to tell each other what you really think of your strengths and weaknesses of their team, it's always a good conversation.
Yeah, no, that's good. That's really good, mate. That's some gold. So while we're talking about coach development, mate, do you want to give Ira a plug for the people that may not know what it is? Or
yeah, well, sort of, I've mentioned it a few times in there, but like I said, it's we're about player and coach development, and we want to do it in probably a slightly different way to the established formal education things. With the players, our player development camps, we create a high performance environment, and obviously kids they apply to come along to it. And what we want to give them is show them what is going to be expected of them if they go to higher levels.
Yeah.
So the kids coming along are 14, 15, 16, 17 year olds. So they should be starting to get into that those representative pathways. So we're trying to give them the experience of what they're going to get in the high representative levels, and teach them habits. So it's a live-in camp, you know, so you get taught not only the on-field techniques, but it's also the off-field habits, recovery, strength. We do a bit of testing to highlight what physical things you need to work on. But then video analysis. Some kids are not used to or haven't been taught how to use, you know, the huddle, the basic video analysis stuff, and you know what, teach them how to analyze a game, like not just where to look for themselves, but what are you looking for. So basically just teach all of the high performance aspects of the game, giving them those habits and hoping that they take them away and use them. It's not just a one-off experience, here's a little toy, play with it for a while, now go back. It's like, we want to teach you how, if you do this regularly in your rugby life, you should maximise your potential and go to higher levels.
Yeah, okay. And what does the coach's camp does?
Yeah, as I said, like? Yeah, it's really it really focuses a lot more on the practical knowledge of the game. So you spend a lot more time on the grass. And the coaches who are coaching the players are also the coaches who come instruct the coaches cohort as well. So you're always, because it's a live-in situation, you're always going to be they'll always be available to keep on picking their brains about things that they're doing. And the other good thing about the whole camp is it's got some context in terms of the players play a game at the end of the week.
Yeah.
So you're not just doing it. As I said very early on, core skills are important and they've got to be your big rocks. But so we do our core skills, we get their technique right on core skills, but then you also do line out work. And so you're not just teaching line out technique, you've got line out technique with calls. And the reason you've got to learn this call and understand it is you're going to be playing on Friday. Yeah. You have to use that call in that game. So everything's got match context as well.
Yeah. No, that's good. That's really good, mate. I've know a few guys that have been involved with the coaches side of it. That did it, like Zach and all those guys. And I did the IRANS one quite a few years ago. It's very, very similar. The concept's the same, but I think it's run a bit different here around some of the principles. But it's, yeah, the more time you get on the grass as a coach, the better.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, it's practical and it's contextual as well. And it's all about, I just want people to walk away going, oh, geez, I've got so many new things to try. I've learned so many new things. Can't wait to implement them when I get back. You've got to have good takeaways.
Yeah, and I think too, like you said, it's that live in for that week. The connections that you make with other coaches.
Mm.
I mean, there's still a couple of guys that I did IRANs with a few years ago that every now and again would just get a message out of the blue. Where, you know, having problems with this, what do you reckon? You know, so yeah, it's those connections that you make with other.
Yeah,
coaches that you might be able to go, oh, well, I don't know the answer to that, but geez, I reckon this bloke might know it, and
creating more of a network.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. That's awesome. Thank you. One last one, mate. I'll let you go because I know you're super busy. What advice would you give yourself if you could go back in time to that first coaching gig, knowing what you know now?
Yeah. I reckon keeping your emotions in check when you're coaching. I used to yell a lot. I'm embarrassed about how much I used to yell. But just keeping your emotions, you need to be level-headed. I'm pretty sure I'm a better coach now than what I was, say, 20 years ago. But I just think, like, analytical messages are so much more important and effective. And I think players are a bit more switched on to that these days too. You know, the whole thing about the breathing, the synchronizing breathing and taking deep breaths and calming down. Like that's all a physiological method of helping you to concentrate. Yeah. So you need to be able to concentrate and process information rather than just being wide all the time. You know, let's just smash them harder. Like the game, if you want to play the game at a higher level, you've got to be thinking a little bit more. So yeah, that's keeping the emotions in check a little bit, going for a lot more analytical messages and telling players what they need to do or what they need to be aware of to get a better result. That sort of messaging rather than, oh, you're doing this wrong, you've got to do it better. Being more specific with information, I think is it's probably the biggest improvement I reckon I've made in my coaching. So I tell my young coach to pull their head in, stop yelling so much, and put your energy into something else.
Yeah, nice. And I was a bit of a yeller when I was younger, but it doesn't achieve anything, you know.
Nah, doesn't even.
And sometimes it just makes you look like a dick.
Definitely.
Yeah. No, mate, that's gold. Thank you so much for your time, mate.
No worries.
Enjoy. Really appreciate it, mate.
Look forward to it.
That's a mighty shot. A mighty Mike Leicester have driven them off their own ball.